From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Open lines later this hour. By the way, happy birthday to the Marine Corps, 230 years old today. They don't look a day over 25. Next hour, haunted lighthouses and what really happened 30 years ago to the ship, the Edmund Fitzgerald. I covered that story. Our guest will be Mark Gumbinger. We'll talk about that. Very fateful day in Lake Superior, the winds of November. Something's going on in the sky, so much so that I'm going to open up a special hotline at the halfway point of this hour to those of you who live in Atlanta, Georgia. I'll tell you about that in a second. But if you look at the feature story on the coasttocoastam.com website, take a look at the video sent to us by a fellow police officer in northern Michigan. He and one of his other officers witnessed a large meteor entering the atmosphere. I think it also could be space debris, initially exploding, lighting up the night sky, then trailing some distance before it disintegrated. And although he says, "I witnessed the spectacle at the same time, but at a different location as a fellow officer," the other officer caught it on his car video camera. So if you have the capability of getting up to the coasttocoastam.com website, take a look at the feature article. That is, it brightens up the entire sky. And I've been getting emails now from people all over the country saying, "Hey, what's going on with meteor showers? There are none scheduled, so I don't know what's happening there." But in Atlanta, I've been getting some messages from people that apparently hundreds of people have witnessed a very strange object just about an hour or so ago, approximately 25 to 30 feet in the sky, resembling a string of pearls moving to the north away from downtown Atlanta. After several minutes, it literally vaporized into a mist, then floated away. They say tonight is quite clear with a high ceiling. It was very sharp, and this thing looked with really images of pearls. It was not a jet trail or a cloud formation. It was strange. So later this hour, I'll open up a phone line to those of you in Atlanta if you saw this strange object. We'll try to track it. Authorities in China have quarantined 116 people in a northeastern province after two new outbreaks of bird flu there. The province has now suffered three outbreaks in less than 3 weeks, despite a massive campaign to contain the virus. Kuwait reported the first two cases of bird flu in the Gulf region, but said that it would do tests to determine whether they were caused by the deadly H5N1 strain. Well, in Iraq, bombers killed 40 people Thursday at a restaurant favored by police in an army recruiting center, while Iraqi troops along the Iranian border found 27 decomposing bodies, unidentified victims of the violence still plaguing that country. In the deadliest bombing in Baghdad since September 19th, two homicide bombers blew themselves up in a restaurant at about 9:45 a.m. when officers usually stop in for breakfast. Seven police officers and 26 civilians died, 24 others wounded. Thousands of Jordanians rallied in the capital of Amman and other cities shouting, "Burn in hell Abu Musab al-Zarqawi," a day after three deadly hotel bombings that killed at least 59 people. Officials suspected Iraqis' involvement in the attacks, which were claimed by al-Qaeda's Iraq branch. As protesters in Jordan and elsewhere in the Arab world denounced the Jordanian-born leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq, security forces snared a group of Iraqis for questioning, and officials said one of the bombers spoke Iraqi accent Arabic before he exploded his bomb belt in the Grand Hyatt Hotel. I mean, these people have got to be crazy. I saw a website today that shows these bomb victims and these homicide bombers, what's left of them, and I've got to tell you, these people are out of control. Police stepped up patrols of Manhattan hotels as a precaution following three hotel suicide bombings in Jordan. Many visitors went about their business in New York as usual, saying they trusted the city's terrorism expertise. Mayor Michael Bloomberg said New York's hotels had not been threatened and called the security boost a normal precaution. Violence in France fell sharply overnight, one day after the government toughened its stance by imposing emergency measures and ordering deportations of foreigners involved in riots that have just raged for 2 weeks. In the past 2 nights, they say there was a notable decline in the number of car burnings, a barometer of the intensity of the country's worst civil unrest in nearly 40 years. Well, he's at it again. Religious broadcaster Pat Robertson has warned residents of a small rural Pennsylvania town called Dover that disaster may strike there because they voted God out of your city by ousting school board members who favored teaching intelligent design. All 8 Dover, Pennsylvania school board members up for re-election were defeated after trying to introduce intelligent design, which is the belief that the universe is so complex that it must have been created by a higher power as an alternative to the theory of evolution. And Pat Robertson says that something could strike that city. Capping a 5-year-long saga of destruction, an iceberg about the size of the Hawaiian island of Maui has split into 3 pieces in the frigid Antarctic. The larger iceberg named B-15A calved into 3 smaller icebergs. 2 of the larger ones are about the size of Grand Cayman and St. Croix. Ford Motor Company has introduced a mini fleet of hybrid taxis to serve New York City, part of its push to promote cleaner, more efficient fuel vehicles. Initially, only 6 Ford Escape hybrids will enter New York's taxi fleet, but city officials said the entire fleet of about 13,000 vehicles may be converted to gas and electric hybrids within 5 years. The hybrids get about 36 miles per gallon in city driving. Gecko lizards, by the way, can walk across a ceiling upside down thanks to invisible hairs on the soles of their feet. Now scientists have learned the hairs get even stickier with an increase in humidity. The result could help researchers develop stickier tape. The foot of a gecko is covered with about 1 billion tiny hairs. Each is some 200 nanometers in length and width. A human hair is roughly 100,000 nanometers wide. The hairs work like Velcro. And a newfound ancient sea creature looks to be part crocodile, part Tyrannosaurus rex, and 100% terrifying, so much so you can see what this thing looks like under Hot Stories on coasttocoastam.com. The 13-foot-long beast had a massive 18-inch-long jaw with interlocking 4-inch teeth. It's a long-lost relative of the crocodile, yet this thing had fins. A digital rendering of the creature reveals the sort of thing typically reserved for horror movies. The sheer strangeness of the beast found in South America led its discoverers to call it Godzilla, after the huge dinosaur-like movie icon. In a moment, Steve Alton, who investigates the Loch Ness Monsters, we're in a book called The Loch, our guest, as we talk about this creature and we get an update on the Loch Ness Monster. Well, Steve Alton, author, his book called The Loch, a native of Philadelphia. Steve, this beast that they found, that they've dubbed Godzilla, you don't think that could be the Loch Ness Monster, do you?
I don't think so, George. These sea crocs went extinct quite a while ago, and the fact that they're reptiles would eliminate the chances of them still being alive. But it could be a distant relative, though.
I tell you, I saw what could have been the rendition of this thing, and I'm glad I wasn't around in those days, Steve.
Well, amazingly, the skull looks very similar to the skull that we've now reconstructed that we believe is the Loch Ness Monster based on recent evidence. And it has the same large type of jagged teeth for biting and cutting prey, and almost identical. So maybe they are in some way related.
Well, you know, this looks like the head of a Tyrannosaurus rex, and we know how ferocious that animal was, at least the way the movies depict it. You know, some people say the thing only ate plants, but who knows? But the fact that it's got these huge 4-inch interlocking teeth, if Nessie indeed resembles this creature, That's a pretty scary thought, too, Steve.
Yeah, and, you know, going back to that four-inch tooth, you mentioned a four-inch tooth, so immediately I think of that tooth that those students found back in March. That also resembles the teeth that are in this creature they call Godzilla.
Now, this one has fins. It was 13 feet long, so not particularly big in terms of dinosaur size. You know, some of the reports that you've gotten about Nessie kind of make it around this size, don't they?
Some of them. You know, some of the sightings that have happened over the years depicted as being about that size. But there was actually, you know, they call this ocean croc Godzilla, but there was actually another prehistoric giant ocean-dwelling crocodile, and that was called Sarcosuchus, and that was a real monster, 40 feet long and weighed about 8 tons. So this is an amazing discovery, but it's far from being the biggest prehistoric crocodile they've ever found.
Do you believe that these sea creatures had a better chance of surviving than land-based dinosaurs?
Yes, absolutely, but not reptiles. Predatory fish, yes, but not reptiles, because reptiles are susceptible to the cold waters, and they would, at some point, they would have to warm their bodies. And this is a creature that they found to live in the Pacific Ocean probably about 135 million years ago. So there were just too many changes in sea temperatures for a reptile to survive, but a predatory fish, yeah.
You know what I find so fantastic, though, Steve? We continue to find new creatures, new things on this planet. It doesn't end.
Absolutely, and all in the oceans. And, you know, again, we've only explored about 5% of our oceans and less than 1% of our deep waters. So we really don't know what's down there. And since the last time I spoke with you, they finally took pictures for the first time of a giant squid. And that happened, I guess, about a month ago.
Okay, give me some updates on the search for Nessie and what's going on there.
Well, as you know, my thriller, The Lock, is based on breaking new research and new theories about the Loch Ness Monster, what type of species it is, and why it's never really been photographed, because it is a deep-water predator that doesn't surface, despite what the Highlanders would have us believe, mm-hmm. for tourism. These two students found a 4-inch tooth and a deer carcass back in March. The tooth was confiscated. They haven't gotten it back. But we had a panel of experts examine the photos of that tooth, and they concurred that it would be a species related to the eel family.
So they ruled out that it could have been a tip of a deer antler or anything like that?
It was a majority that ruled that it would favor a deep water predatory eel. Nobody agreed that it was an antler.
Okay.
So that was ruled out. And what my publisher did something amazing. They put out a $10,000 bounty in late July for fishermen in Britain to capture one of these smaller eels that proliferate the waters in the British Isles. And finally, one of the fishermen hauled one out. And we've just posted images of the actual photos of this amazing creature with teeth that are just as nasty as this
big creature
crocodile.
Here. Yeah, just a smaller version.
Just a smaller version. And
without the fins.
Well, actually, they do have four fins.
Oh, they do?
Yeah, small four fins.
And, okay, just like the creature then.
Yes, and we took the skull and we sent it to a guy who makes museum pieces out in Arizona. And we said, look, we're not going to tell you what size to make this. Just size the teeth so that they match the tooth that these students reported to be found back in March. And he did. And the size of the skull measures 6 feet, 6 inches and is incredibly similar to the images that we're looking at for this marine crocodile.
6 feet for the skull?
6 feet, 6 inches.
Oh, my God.
With a row of barbed teeth that run straight down the back of its throat. I mean, this is definitely a predatory fish. The teeth are large and jagged, definitely for biting and cutting prey. This is a vicious hunter. And again, you mentioned it yourself. You know, we really don't know what's down at the depths of the oceans, and this is definitely a deep water predator.
My sources, who are very, very accurate, tell me that you were in New York for a book signing, wheeling this skull through the streets. Is this true?
It was only in New York can you wheel a 6'6" skull of what could be the Loch Ness Monster, and certainly looks like a T-Rex skull, and nobody looks.
They just walked on their way, huh?
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, the most fun I had was we had a book signing with the skull then in Washington, D.C., so we decided, you know, as a publicity stunt, we would go by the White House. So we alerted the police officers ahead of time so we wouldn't be arrested as terrorists, and pulled the skull in front of the White House and pretty much scared the hell out of all the protesters there.
That's something. I mean, this is a six-footer. Now, of course, this is a rendition made, but that's still pretty frightening, I've got to tell you. What's going on in the book world, and wasn't there going to be a movie made on the monster? How close are you getting on that?
Well, my first novel, Meg, which is about another monster, a 60-foot megalodon, which is a prehistoric great white shark, is about to be greenlit by New Line Cinema.
Great.
And that'll be out in spring, summer 2007.
60-foot, that's bigger than Jaws.
Oh yeah. I mean, this thing had teeth that were 6 to 7 inches long, and the shark itself probably weighed about 50 tons.
Too bad Robert Shaw's not alive still. He would have been great for that one, huh?
He would have been a snack.
Yeah, he would have. He would have. Well, Steve, the search itself, though, what's going on with that for the Loch Ness Monster?
They've put out a substantial reward now, which has been, most of it's been committed by the scientific community, and it's been doubled by my own publisher, who really wants to see this through. And obviously for publicity for the book, because we believe strongly in the theories of the book. And we've had police officers from Inverness come forward and verify that these two students were trying to get their evidence back, with their tooth back, that was confiscated by the Holland authorities. So the fact that that was corroborated is very encouraging. It means that the students, it would be, you know, outrageous for the students to have made it up at this point. We've also had a couple oceanographers who confirmed that the coloration of the tooth itself would indicate that this creature is pretty old, that as these creatures get older, the teeth tend to blacken, and in this case, the tips were black, and the tooth almost had a bluish look to it. And there's no way that two students, especially one of them being a pre-law student, would know anything about these type of fish. So, again, all indications are that this was a real tooth. We understand why the Highlanders took it. I mean, they are perpetrating the Loch Ness Monster to be a creature that looks more like Dino the dinosaur from the Flintstones than what it actually is. And there's a reason behind that, because these deep water predatory fish don't surface for our tourists to take pictures of them. And that's not good for business.
We're getting any more sightings in the Loch?
There's always sightings going on, but Robert Rhines, a few months ago, did a press release, and he claimed that he has found DNA evidence. So things are happening more rapidly. I spoke to one scientist who put out a blurb in the news recently, who believes that global warming may be the reason that we're suddenly getting so many more sightings and so much more evidence at Loch Ness than we've ever had before. Global warming affecting the food chain at Loch Ness, affecting the fish migration patterns, and so whatever this creature or creatures are, they're forced to alter their diet and come hunting along the shoreline.
Well, you know, the Chinese are looking for Loch-type monster as well.
I saw that article as well, yes, and of course, there's always Lake Champlain.
All right, Steve, your website, stevealton.com. I've got that linked up on coasttocoastam.com. Thanks for the update on the search for the Loch Ness Monster, Steve, and also reacting to the Godzilla skull that they have found here.
Always a pleasure, George.
Okay, my friend. Steve Alton, Great Mysteries. By the way, we're going to open up the phone lines now. We've got pure open lines for you, but a special hotline for those of you in Atlanta that might have seen tonight this string of pearls in the sky. That phone number only for you is 818-817-0021. That's 818-817-0021. I'm George Norrie. I'll be back with you with open lines in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we'll have open lines for you. By the way, Spike Mike from the Fantastic Forum sends me a quick note and says that the Leonids, by the way, they are the most famous of all the meteor showers, will peak this year on November 17th. By the way, a few years ago, the Leonids were storming, filling the skies with bright meteors, but not this year. The 2005 Leonids are expected to be very few, less than 20 per hour. And pretty hard to see because of the glaring full moon around that period. Now, this doesn't mean you shouldn't watch that meteor shower. Just don't expect a strong display like past years. And I wonder if that's what the police officer captured on video that you see on the coasttocoastam.com website. Maybe also that's what some people are seeing in Atlanta. I don't know. We'll go to some of those calls in a moment. By the way, can a worker be fired from his job because he sees and believes in ghosts? Yes, according to one Iowa judge. Although the judge says such beliefs don't constitute worker misconduct, which would disqualify him from receiving unemployment benefits. Listen to this weird one. Wade Galagos of Des Moines was fired in September from his security company that he worked. He was a security guard, which means he listens to Coast to Coast. He had worked there for about 5 weeks, and according to records, he was in a guardhouse outside of a gated community on the night of September 11 when he reported seeing a group of apparitions standing near a car. He summoned a coworker and supervisor, and while the two men were there, Galagos said that he still could see the ghosts, although the other men assured him that they could not see anything. The supervisor saw no evidence of drinking or drug abuse. 5 hours later, though, he fired Galagos. The company later challenged Galagos's application for unemployment benefits. The judge, however, awarded the unemployment benefits, saying that he's still at a loss to explain the incident. And according to Galagos, it was one of those strange things. But that's what happened. He got fired for seeing a ghost. And got a strange email in, by the way, from someone who caught my interview yesterday with Ed Dames, Dr. Doom. Ed was here in the studio. We were taping a pay-per-view TV show that'll be on In Demand on January 24th, by the way. I'll tell you about that the middle of next month. Says, George, Dr. Doom that you interviewed last night is not the Dr. Doom that Art has interviewed. The Dr. Doom you interviewed has an accent. The one that Art did not. He never had an accent before. I just downloaded the old interviews. He sounds American in every way. Yet your latest interview clearly shows that you are interviewing someone with an accent. Have you sold out? I thought I could count on you. That was not Dr. Doom. Well, I've got to tell you that this is the first time that I have met Ed Dames. Delightful man. And that by all indications, he was Ed Dames, Dr. Doom, and his picture was posted yesterday on our Digicam. And I think one of the reasons you might think that it might not be him is most of the time the interviews are conducted on the telephone, and Ed was in the studio, and sometimes you sound a little different on a phone. So I think that's probably what you were listening to. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, and don't even know my name anymore. Let's go back to the phones. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, this is Sean from Tonopah.
Hi, Sean. How are you?
Good, good. I just wanted to talk to you about these recent meteor showers we've been seeing. You had a caller call in last Friday, the 4th, about some showers she saw in southern Idaho. And about the same time she called in, I witnessed three or four of them come down in the sky. One of them was just like the one you see here on the 7th on that video.
Right.
You know, I think they're part of the torrid shower.
Could be the torrid also.
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of green on the screen that when you watch the video. So it also could be like what they call a bolide or a fireball, which is from like man-made objects entering the atmosphere.
Yeah, this one was a big one. It looked like space debris because it was so immense.
Well, why the recent activity? You think it's all just sort of basically meteorites and fallout from sort of cosmic debris?
Well, I don't know. It's pretty strange because I'm getting messages from people all around the country. I mean, everywhere they're seeing these things. I've never seen it at this intensity before.
Well, yeah, neither have I. And it's like seems like I've seen some reports now also in Russia and in Europe. They're seeing it as well. And you kind of have to wonder because, you know, it's daytime over there when it's night here. And how are they seeing some of the stuff that usually would be just privy for us to see?
I just hope this isn't the leading edge of some broken up object that's coming this way.
Well, I hope not. Or, you know, as they say in end times, you know, the fire in the sky.
So, yeah, tell me about it. Could be a message. Hey, thank you. Let's go to our Atlanta hotline and see what is on their mind. Hi there. Welcome to the show.
This is Tim.
Yeah. Hello there.
Hey, this is Tim from Greenville, South Carolina.
Hi,
this is on 1330.
Great. So what's up there?
I don't know. I just seen a meteorite while you were talking to your last caller. I'm standing out here on the back porch. I'm kind of a rural area, right on the South Carolina-Georgia border, north of Atlanta.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to pick a friend of mine up from work that needed a ride. Right at 1 o'clock when the show come on, I caught your message. I started looking up in the sky, and I haven't seen the pearl object yet. Like I say, I'm about 160 miles north of Atlanta, northeast, in between Atlanta and Charlotte, actually. And but what I did notice is like a two chemtrail-type clouds in front of the moon just going straight across the sky. And I thought maybe it was 80 degrees here yesterday. Now I just see another meteorite. And so I'm looking toward Atlanta, actually, now. I'm looking down Interstate 85 toward Atlanta. But I looked up in the sky as I dropped him off, and I seen his two chemtrails across the moon. The moon's about 3 or 4 degrees above the trees. And I seen these chemtrails, and we just had a cold front blow through here like last night or this morning. And I'm thinking, well, maybe it's the cloud pattern. But then as I'm looking again, I see two more chemtrails or whatever it was, crossing it, kind of like not a tic-tac-toe, but they were crossing.
Well, the chemtrails are going to continue. They're going to be going on and on. But what I'm looking for right now is anybody in the Atlanta area, and thanks for your call, who might have seen this string of pearls going. Now, sure, it's unusual. We're getting so many reports of meteorites and those kinds of things from various showers, like I mentioned, the Leonids and the Taurids. But I'm not getting a lot of mention from the Taurids on the scientific websites that I've been studying and reading. They talk primarily about the Leonids, so who knows what the heck is going on. East of the Rockies, you're on the air on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. It's Greg from Cincinnati.
Hi there. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you doing?
Good.
Hey, listen, you had a guest on last night. I didn't catch the whole interview, but you were talking about the Mayans.
Yes, that was with Will Hart, H-A-R-T.
Great, great interview. I belong to an astronomy club here in Cincinnati, and all over southwestern Ohio, all over Ohio, period, there's mounds, and there's the mystery of the mound people.
Yes.
Now, there's a theory that the Mayans destroyed their ecosystem by planting crops, and they migrated north. Now, in Fort Ancient, which is about 50 miles northeast of Cincinnati, there's mounds all over the place, and there's a calendar that's similar to the Chichen Itza one where the shadow of the serpent goes down.
Yes.
And there's also two petroglyphs, one of a cross and one of a serpent mound, and the calendar is basically just two rocks, one on the, you know, that's on the horizon. The sun that goes directly down in, you know, the fall and in the spring equinox perfectly. And there's a theory that that's what happened. The Mayans migrated north. They ruined their ecosystem. They found Ohio, which was a lot better to plant crops. And the theory is that the math is not the same sophistication, but it's very similar.
Well, you know, I'm convinced that the Mayans, even during their catastrophe, thousands and thousands of years ago, migrated all over the place. Those of you who have had the opportunity to get to Cahokia, Illinois, which is right across the Mississippi from St. Louis, they have the Cahokia Mounds there. Just an incredible sight as well. And I think they took some kind of a sound test a couple of years ago, and there are structures under those mounds. They have not dug into them yet because they're sacred, but there's something there, and that's a great story. Let's go to our first-time caller line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
My name's John Paul. I'm from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Hey, hello, John Paul.
How you doing today?
Good.
calling in. I went on a trip to northern Arizona this past week, and I had a sighting with my girlfriend in a lake on Apache reservation of a mermaid in the lake. And I was wondering if any of your callers or you might have experience or know any knowledge of legends or stories of mermaids in lakes.
I have not heard any calls about mermaids on lakes, but tell me about this one.
Okay, it was towards Sholo. I think it was Sunrise Mountain. We're at the lodge, basically by ourselves, down season. Her father's the engineer at the lodge, and we went out back towards the lake and started taking photographs. She had my camera, and we were basically standing right by the dry dock, about 20 feet away from where we were standing. A head popped out of the water, pretty much, and it was about the size of a child's head. And it had the face of an older woman, and the skin was dark gray, almost a bluish dead tone to it.
So maybe about 4 feet long, if you had to guess?
I probably, honestly, around the height of a small child, it's around 4 feet long.
Yeah.
And it had dark gray to black eyes, dark hair, and like a smoky tinge to its actual facial features.
Oh, my God.
And just like stared at us for a few seconds, blinked, and then just went underwater. I mean, I was frozen. I couldn't really move.
Oh, I'd be sure. You didn't see the tail or
when it went under, it kicked up just like a fish.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt what it was. I mean, it was...
That's unbelievable. I you know what? I don't know what these creatures are. If it's a fish-type creature that has a human-type face, I have seen that on the Internet before. I mean, it's kind of strange, but that's probably not what you saw. You have seen something a little stranger.
I'm not sure exactly what it was, so if any of your callers might know anything about that or have seen anything like that, I'd love to hear more about it.
Okay, great. Thanks. Great story. Wildcard line, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George.
Yeah.
This is Tom in Pennsylvania.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Hey, you know how you're always saying you don't believe in coincidence?
Yes, sir.
Well, you know what? I think I got you.
What happened?
Well, first of all, I drive truck coast to coast.
Okay.
Okay. My dad, back in the early 70s, used to drive limousine from Pennsylvania up to New York City and JFK. Sometimes he'd get a couple of days, they'd be up there. Well, a couple Friday nights ago, I went to bed early because I wasn't feeling too good. Well, I normally shut my truck off when I go to sleep. So this particular night, I was having a dream. This dream was about my dad's funeral.
Hmm.
And Jim Belushi was doing the eulogy.
John's brother.
And he was showing this this movie of my dad driving a limousine up to a motel in New York City, getting out and going to a passenger side back door, opening the door, and John Belushi came out. And he was saying how my dad and him got along good, and, you know, my dad would, you know, normally pick him up and take him places. This was the dream. I got up about 5 minutes after 4 that morning because it was cold in the truck. I go to start up the truck to get some heat. I said to myself, I think I'm going to see what George was talking about tonight. So I turned on the radio, and sure enough, you were talking to John's widow.
Yep.
So what
are the odds of that happening, right?
I thought, now that's a coincidence that George can't deny.
See, well, I would call it synchronicity. That to me is different than a coincidence. To me, synchronicity means you're tied in, I'm tied in, Judith Belushi's tied in, and everybody's in this wireless internet that's out there. I think there was a reason that you had that dream. There was a reason you got up that day. There was a reason that night you got into your cab and turned on the radio. I mean, it's just, I just don't think these things just happen by accident.
But it has to be a coincidence. I mean, I knew nothing about the programming. Nobody talked to me that day about
I think your subconscious knows. That's the big difference. That's my theory. Not the conscious mind, not the you that is making this phone call right now. The subconscious part of you that, you know, is hooked into just about everything that's out there.
Yeah, but what's the chances of that happening at the same time?
That's what I mean. It defies odds. Okay, thanks for the call.
Be a coincidence. All right, bye.
All right, take care. West of the Rockies, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I'm Sue from Vancouver, Canada.
Hi, Sue.
Hi. I was just wondering, whatever happened to the gentleman that had phoned you in the summertime telling you that he was in the, I don't know, mountainous area and was catching a Sasquatch or something?
Oh,
whatever happened.
Well, we had a follow up. He claims he was duped by people who claimed that they captured one.
And
he made this big announcement on the program that he had one. He was going up to see it and his staff was there. Mm-hmm. And then it was revealed that he did not have one. His contention was that he was duped and he faded away and he never found one.
Oh, that's not right.
No. Next week, by the way, I'm going to talk to one of the world-renowned cryptozoologists, Lauren Coleman.
Oh, yeah?
And I believe he may already have some sources that are going to put up $1 million for some evidence. That could be an interesting show.
Oh, that would be very interesting.
But no Bigfoot sightings yet by that group.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. It sounded so, you know, plausible the way he was going on.
I think these things are possible. I just haven't seen the proof yet.
Well, I think they're possible as well, but it sounded so real the way he was going on about the mosquitoes and his people. And
well, all that was real. I mean, he was out there, and they were out there, and they were getting bitten by mosquitoes. I mean, all that's fact. Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being on the program. Wildcard Line, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, John.
Yes, sir. Hi.
John from Montana.
Hi, John. You're breaking up, unfortunately, and we're getting close to the end, so we may never get you back in tonight. First time caller line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi.
Hi, George. This is Juan from San Antonio, Texas.
Hi, Juan. Welcome to the show.
No, I was just wondering if you ever had episodes or guests, either authors or psychics, talking about the death of either Bob Crane or, since it's pretty close anniversary, of John Lennon, some different inconsistencies I've noticed on different both cases.
Well, I heard the John Lennon part, but I didn't hear the first part.
Oh, or the murder of Bob Crane.
What are the similarities?
Well, not the similarities, but
from Hogan's Hero, you're talking about.
You know, odd instances, like, for instance, with the Lennon case, his supposed killer was on his right side, but the entrance wounds were on his left. And for some reason, on one of the entranceway to the lobby that leads to concierge office, why is there bullet holes in that glass door when it doesn't face the street or facing Chapman's direction?
Huh. Okay. No, that's strange. No, we haven't done that. I have interviewed our Gary Patterson, and we've talked a little bit about John Lennon's death. And I interviewed someone about 2 years ago who talked about some Hollywood deaths, and they kicked on the Bob Crane story for a little bit. But we've not had any tie-ins together by any means with that. If you need to email me, we'll keep those cards and letters coming. It's george@coasttocoastam.com. Now, in a moment, our guest will be Mark Gumbingruff, and we're going to be talking with him about the Edmund Fitzgerald, the first hour, 30-year anniversary of that ship sinking on Lake Superior. And then the following hour after that, we're going to talk about haunted lighthouses. And then later on, we'll open up the phone lines right here on Coast to Coast AM.